items of the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the Betzel motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain, Senator Kubley.
You didn't think I'd forget your name, did you?
Well, I wondered. Shall we pray? Creator God and sustainer spirit, as we enter the final weeks of our session, we find that sometimes disagreements erupt, feelings are expressed, and we sometimes become alienated from one another. Is it because we lack vision, Lord? Do we ever ask ourselves and others what kind of state we want to live in here in Minnesota? We may be working toward a different vision, or it may be part of the problem is more basic than that. Do we need to ask ourselves if we are who we want to be or who you want us to be? Do we spend time thinking about the kind of people you want us to become? When, with your help, we have become the people we were created to be, maybe then we can ask how we can create a state that is more consistent with the ideals we hold. Well, I know, Lord, we're always tempted to believe that ideals are somehow impractical, and thereby we relieve ourselves of any responsibility for trying to put those ideals into practice. So teach us how to disagree, Lord. Disagreement need not mean alienation. Sometimes we make a mistake by assuming that unity and uniformity are the same thing. Because we often equate unity with uniformity, we believe we are all separate from one another, that we are not related members of the same human family. Help us in this time to see that you are the creator of each and every one of us, and that we are all expressions of the same spirit you have so generously and so graciously given. If only we could learn to see ourselves as members of your family, Lord, maybe we would more easily consider the feelings, positions, and understandings of those who present a different point of view, and we would soften our rhetoric in recognition of the fact that tomorrow we may have to deal with feelings of regret. So renew our vision of us within our own spirits, Lord, so that we recognize those feelings within ourselves. We may seek an element of your forgiveness and be restored in our relationships with you and with one another. In your strong name, amen.
Good, Gary. Very nice. Yeah.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Monoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cullen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Boring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Lurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemeller, Bretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wigger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. First order of business is reports of committee. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is second reading of House bills. There's one on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a couple of resolutions on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be sent to the Rules Committee.
We're not doing a calendar.
Right.
Later, maybe.
Stay on motions and resolutions.
Staying on motions and resolutions, we've got introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills.
General orders?
Yeah, I think so. We don't have anything else, right?
We're going to go on to
General orders, I believe, Senator Betts.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the plan is to not take up the calendar at this time. We may not be taking up today's calendar at all today. We might be just holding that until tomorrow. There's 10 items today, and there's 5 from Tuesday and 5 items from yesterday. A decision will be made later on, but as I say, right now, there is not a plan to take up the calendar yet. So we would be going on to general orders. There is a list at the front desk for members who don't have them. It's the third revision for Thursday, April 26th. So, Mr. President, I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The committee shall be in order. The first bill on general orders, number 31, Senate File 802, Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 802 be recommended to pass.
Senator Coring on the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment. Would I offer that at this time?
Yes. You can. The Secretary will report the Coring A50 amendment.
Senator Coring moves to amend Senate File 802 as follows, page 18. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Coring on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. What this amendment is it's just a couple of corrections that we had to make. This bill is the it's a kind of a recodification of the language in 149A doing to do with the mortuary science statute. We had the bill heard in Senator Marty's committee, and it was heard on the last day of the deadlines. And unbeknownst to me, Senator Mimua wanted to hear this in the Judiciary Committee because of, on page 18, the advanced directive, there's new language that was put in there by the department. And the chair of the Judiciary Committee asked that I would just take out the new language so that the bill could continue to move forward. And so the amendment does take out the language under Section 39 under advanced directives. It takes that out. And then also in the amendment on page 30, I take that back. On page
18, you're deleting Section 39. Is that?
Yes. That, and then there's one other one here, Mr. Chairman. It's page 30, line 4.
After pouch. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, here's what we're doing on page 30, line 4. It reads, cremation, unless encased in an appropriate cremation container or wrapped in an impermeable sheet or pouch, and then we're adding, after pouch, we're adding, and placed on a tray rigid enough to handle with ease. This is some language that has been adopted by the CANA, the Cremation Society of North America, and so we're adding this in here. It was kind of a compromise between the Cremation Society and the Department of Health. We had a meeting with Senator Berglund and myself, and we worked out this language. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, that's what this amendment is. And members, what the bill really is I don't think there's anything in here that anybody needs to be concerned about. It's just
Let's act on the amendment first.
Okay,
before we get into the bill. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, I rise to support Senator Coring's amendment, and I appreciate his meeting with me so that the work that was done in the committee could be preserved. And the language that is being deleted here is just, as he says, language that Mimoi asked to have deleted. Otherwise, the bill would have had to go to judiciary. And then the second part of this is in keeping with the practices that are being used today by one of our major cremation organizations. And so they've seen the language also, and they do support it.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, either for Senator Berglund or Senator Coring, I think Senator Hahn in committee had offered one where we took out the requirement for the box, which they said the cardboard box added dignity and so on. This, in effect, is your compromise in order to keep that out of it and yet make sure it's able to be handled appropriately.
Senator Coring.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Marty, that is correct. We're trying to stay in the spirit of what the committee work that was done, and what this does is it says, virtually says, that the cremation society can continue to operate the way they operate by placing a person that's going to be cremated on a tray, it rigid enough to handle with ease, so that when you're sliding the person into the cremation the retort, that you'll be able to do that with no problems. So,
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, thank you. I think that's a very good way of addressing. Again, Senator Hahn offered that amendment, and I think the whole committee liked it. This seems to be a good way to deal with it. Thank you.
Further discussion.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just stand for any questions. Really, all the bill is it's a recodification of language that there's been no changes in 149A for the last 10 years, and so the department wanted to go through and take out language that was not needed and add language that was needed to help them do their job in enforcement of the statute here, and so. I did have I've had several meetings. I had a meeting with the Minnesota Funeral Directors Association, and we went through the whole bill. They seem to be okay with it.
Mr. President, could we act on the amendment, Mr. President?
I've kind of let it run a little bit. You're too fast for me today.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Or not. I know what we should be doing. We're on the amendment before the bill is explained further. Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now you can keep visiting with us.
Well, I'm just so excited about this bill that, if you can tell. So,
is this your re-election bill?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. So anyway, I would just stand for any questions that anybody would have. But as Senator Berglund has said, I tried to do all my homework to work out the details with the Minnesota Cremation Society, the Minnesota Funeral Directors Association, the Department of Health. Senator Marty and I had some battles, but we worked through that. I'm sure we're going to be doing some battles again next year, but we worked out all the details with the chairman of the Health and Housing Committee, and so I want to thank the authors that are on the bill, Senator Berglund, Senator Kubley, Senator Marty, and Senator Erickson Ropes for their help on this bill too. And so I would stand for any questions, but otherwise I would just say this is a bill that we need to get passed. So
further discussion on Senate File 802. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Coring that Senate File 802 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now the next bill on general orders will be number 22, Senate File 1429, Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee do arise, Senate File 1429 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scheid on the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, the title of the bill is somewhat misleading, but this bill was brought to me by the folks at United Way. It has to do with insurance requirements for vehicles who transport passengers, and they formerly fell into the definition of commercial motor carriers or transporters of passengers. We're saying that they do not have to abide by those standards. They'll just fall into the general automobile insurance. They believe, well, this is shown in other states to have allowed them access to lower insurance premiums, and it's for those 501c3 organizations, the charitable organizations, and I appreciate your support.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 1429? Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Scheid that Senate File 1429 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders, House File 532, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. President. When this committee do arise, I move that House File 1521 or 5321 do pass.
Okay. I believe it's House File 532.
Oh.
Be recommended to pass. Senator Erickson Ropes on the bill.
Thank you. The federal government has passed the Service Members Civil Relief Act many years ago, and that provides certain protections for service members and women who are on active duty in the United States Armed Services, as well as service members called to active duty state duty because of a federal emergency. And this bill is called the Service Members Civil Relief Act. Despite its protections, the SCRA fails to protect service members in a few important respects. For example, while SCRA protects service members' families from evictions, it fails to protect them from being disconnected from utilities such as gas or electric. And this omission is significant because many numerous studies and surveys have indicated around 4 in 10 of our National Guards members and reservists now on active duty make less money while mobilized as they did when they were civilians. So I believe that we need some additional state law protections, and this bill would allow any service member who has been called to active duty to terminate without penalty their wireless service contract, to terminate without penalty rental contracts, not the rental home contracts, but rental contracts like rent-to-own furniture, that sort of thing, club contracts and membership contracts, and also to obtain payments for utility services and protections from shutoff. And at this point, I will stand for questions.
Is there any further discussion on House File 532, Senator Moi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will Senator Erickson Ropes yield for a question?
She will yield. Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I just want to...
Senator Moi.
Senator Erickson Ropes, I wonder if you could just confirm for the body that the language that is in this House file is the language that came out of the process here in the Senate. And in particular, I know that in the Judiciary Committee, we did some substantive work to make sure that some provisions were taken care of that were concerning to some of the members, and I just want to make sure that that was being carried through.
I'm told the Senate language was... is the House language. Is that correct, Senator? Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moi, thank you very much for the question. I believe they are the same language. We rolled over the House version. The House file actually is the file that went through Judiciary, Senator Moi. So there were some concerns about how far the protections extended into the service members' business world and business contracts, and we backed off. These are more related to individual contracts.
Is there further discussion on House File 532? Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Erickson Ropes that House File 532 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. On the general orders calendar, be Senate File 728, Senator Seaman. Want to temporarily progress? Okay, we'll jump over to Senator Thomasoni in the chambers. The next bill, general orders, be Senate File 514, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this chamber do arise, that Senate File 514 be recommended to pass.
Senator Tomasoni on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 514, Mr. President and members, is a bill called Workfare, and what it does is it makes sure that people who are on welfare work and get paid to work, and they make it illegal to make people work and not get paid for the job they're doing. It's just a common sense bill. We want people who are on welfare to be able to rise up out of where they are, and this just makes all the sense in the world. Appreciate your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 514. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Tomasoni and members, I think this is a move in the wrong direction. There are a number of people that when they volunteer on some of these positions, they learn work skills that are helpful to them to find employment at a later point in time. And I think it's a good thing to ask them to do. I think everyone should have some of those responsibilities. And volunteering is not, being asked to volunteer or forced to volunteer is not a bad thing. I think it's a necessary part of what we do with this. Thank you.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wergen, the bill does allow people to volunteer if they like to. They just sign off on it if they want to volunteer. The point of the bill is that there's some people that are actually being forced to volunteer and being told that they'll lose their benefits if they don't volunteer, and they don't want to volunteer. They want to actually work for pay. And but the bill itself does allow it. And in some states, they actually believe that people who have been getting who have good-paying jobs are actually losing their jobs because of the fact that the states are able to force people into this work environment where they have to work without getting paid, and so it's having a negative effect in lots of places. And so what this just says is that that people who are on MFIP have to be paid for their work, but if they would like to volunteer, they're eligible to volunteer, and they can do that.
Senator Wergen.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Tomasoni, let me be a little bit more blunt then. I don't think there's a thing wrong with asking them to do a little bit of unpaid work for their cash assistance. All of us work for our cash, and I think that's okay. I don't think there's really anything wrong. And are we going to lose jobs over it? I highly doubt that. It is simply not that many hours, and I think it's okay to ask for a little bit of unpaid work for the government assistance that they get. And I do believe that they are learning a skill that's necessary for them to learn. In some cases, it actually is a great thing to help them get off from cash assistance programs. So I see nothing wrong with a little bit of unpaid work for cash assistance.
Discussion, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
You got her.
Got it right that time. And the author of the bill, I maybe could answer a question if he's willing. excuse me, I'm just a little unclear about what's the rationale to bring this legislation. My understanding was that the current structure of managing this had been successful, that it had been working, that putting up the requirement of doing some work in return for the welfare assistance was actually offering incentive to people. It was encouraging folks to find useful employment, getting them to move away from the welfare system into a work environment. My understanding has been that this has been a very successful program, and I'm curious, maybe the author can answer, why we need to change this at this point in what seems to be a fairly dramatic way, in that it is removing perhaps one of the strongest incentives for people to find ways to manage their life in a little different path.
Senator Tomasoni.
No, Mr. President, Senator Hand, the fact of the matter is that the workfare programs have proven to be especially ineffective at moving low-income families towards self-sufficiency, and then instead of doing what we want to happen, and that is to get people to work while they're on welfare and move themselves off of welfare. What's been happening because they're not getting paid is their self-esteem and their self-worth has gone so far down that they can't get off. And the program itself has been very, very ineffective. And we have had testimony of people who worked 32 hours a week without getting paid for any of the work. And so this is the kind of stuff that they are being threatened with losing the benefits of the welfare while they're working on these jobs. And what this bill says, that if you want to volunteer and do that kind of work, you can. But it also says that if you don't want to volunteer, you must be paid for the work that you do. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Senator Hand.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Just another question. When you say that the current structure has been not working and has proven to be ineffective, is that consistent with the department, the data that they have? Are they supportive of this as a positive reform? From the standpoint of, if our goal is to encourage people to move away from the public assistance and into work, and if what we're doing is not right, and this is the answer to it, then I would imagine that the department would be in support of this. Did they testify in favor of this, and do they agree with the assessment that the current structure is actually counterproductive? That's news to me. I'm surprised.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President and Senator Hand, there are several surveys that workfare doesn't help TANF families move into gainful employment. There's little evidence that unpaid work experience led to consistent employment earnings effects, and workfare programs are especially ineffective for low-income families. The department's testimony, I thought, was at best confusing in the committee, and they were leaning toward trying to do this, but I don't think they were convinced that it was good or bad. And the overwhelming testimony that we had from people who were actually on welfare was that it was totally degrading to be forced to work and not be paid, and that it's the wrong direction to go for getting people off of welfare.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was in the committee and also heard the testimony, and I think that we have to stand in the shoes of the people who are in this situation. You know, somebody's on welfare, their life's not going very well. In many cases, we're talking about women who have children at home, and they're trying to find work, they're trying to make ends meet while they're caring for their children. They're only allowed to be on welfare for a certain amount of time. We heard testimony where these women were forced to do the volunteer work, and then by the time they had completed that assignment, they had run out of time for welfare, and they yet still didn't have a job. In addition, they often don't have transportation, so they have to find ways to get to the place where they're doing the volunteer work, and many times taking several buses, transferring. You know, we talk about our commitment to early childhood, and we say, oh, we wish, you know, parents could stay home, and these kids need their parents in the home. Imagine you have these women who don't have money for food, and they're trying to get a job, and they're trying to provide the kind of parenting that these kids at risk so desperately need, and we're asking them to leave their homes, take two buses, go here, go there, to do volunteer work that may in fact take up the rest of their opportunity time period to get back on their feet and look for a paying job. It just didn't add up. It didn't seem like we were providing our citizens with the proper tools to get them back to work. And I think that is the goal. The goal is making sure these people are independent, back at work. This program was a good idea. I think it had a work ethic behind it and was based on sound values, based on what I heard from the testimony, that in fact the program was not accomplishing that goal. These women were not back at work. They were not doing the best thing possible for their children, and we weren't using our tax dollars wisely. So I support this bill.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I
was very impressed with the language of this bill, with this bill, when Senator Tomasoni presented it in the chairman's committee, the business industry jobs committee. There was a lady with two children required to volunteer for 32 hours a week. You know, we've pulled childcare and education and those kinds of things away from people. If we really wanted people to move off welfare, we'd hire them for those jobs, see that they had childcare and health care, pay them for their volunteer work, if you will, and give them their cash assistance and let them get ahead. We'd be better off. They'd be off welfare much faster. But to just keep people down with workfare is just, I think it's just flat out wrong. And the administration is trying to expand workfare this year. That's what the department is working toward. And I say no, that's the wrong direction. There was a lady who was working at this volunteer job, required to do it, and then they fired her from it and hired somebody for $10 an hour. I mean, that's outrageous. No, this is a really good bill, and I applaud Senator Tomasoni for bringing it forward.
Senator Roebling, did you wish to speak at this time? You can wait. You ready? Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, to partly answer Senator Hahn's question, the reason that there's concern about this at this time, Minnesota hasn't been using workfare. It has not been one of our strategies. But the federal government is changing the rules that we have to abide by in order to receive some of the federal TANF money. And they're raising the what they call the work participation rate much higher. I think only two states in the nation meet it right now. And so there is concern that there will be more resorting to workfare in order to meet this work participation rate. But there really is no need for us to use workfare to meet the work participation rate. The Senate bill will get us at 55%, and we only need to be at 50%. And we do it in a number of ways, and one of those ways is when somebody doesn't have quite enough work hours to meet the work participation rate, then yes, we ask them to do something else and we pay them to do it. Another way that we do it is by creating supported work programs for people to be in, so that if their problem is not having enough skills to get into a paid job quickly enough, the supported work program will give them those skills and they will be at that program and working through that program and getting paid to do so. And so we don't need workfare in order to meet the federal work participation rate. And that is what the concern is with the bill, that we would move in that direction. Other states have done so. We don't need to do that, and we can keep people moving off of welfare and into paid jobs, and that's really the goal of the program.
Further discussion, Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair and members, I was going to address that issue as well. I'm also a member of the committee and heard the testimony. I will concede that the witness from the Department of Human Services was confusing. I asked her a couple of questions that could have been answered in 10 seconds, and she took 4 minutes, and I didn't understand as much as I would have liked. But here's what I did get out of her testimony. The requirement that the federal government imposes that Senator Berglund just talked about is satisfied with the workfare program. Maybe there'd be some other things that we could do, but that's what we're doing now to satisfy that requirement. Secondly, they typically impute minimum wage to the people who work in these unpaid positions. So if they're getting a $300 a month cash allowance, they should be working no more than about 40 to 45 hours a month. Now, there was some testimony from one of the witnesses that she was working, I think, 30 hours a week. The witness from the Department of Human Services couldn't corroborate that or not. But if that was happening with respect to that one person, it's wrong. But the program only requires them to work at minimum wage based on the cash allowance that they get. And they also are supposed to get extra money for their for the transportation to get to and from work. I was particularly, though, not impressed with the witnesses who came in and said, I have a right to welfare. And how can the state have the audacity to make me work? That's the impression that I got from their witnesses or from the testimony. And I think that that's just an outrageous statement. I think that if, first of all, this program doesn't require them to go into workfare for the first 6 months. So the first 6 months, they're supposed to get training on resumes, they're supposed to be applying for jobs, and only if they don't have the skills to get actually hired by somebody do they then go into the workfare. That's my understanding as to how it works. But you know, the citizens of Minnesota have a right to say, if you're going to get cash benefits and you can't find a job on your own, do something, build a resume, develop a work ethic. That is a reasonable thing for us to ask people to do. And finally, those two witnesses who came in and testified didn't tell us, really, that I can recall, what they would do instead of the voluntary work. What were they going to do to improve their job, their likelihood of getting a job? What were they going to do to help write better resumes or to prove to employers that they were worthy of being hired for pay? All they came in and said is, we don't think that the state should be able to force us to work for nothing. Well, with that, I respectfully disagree, and I don't think that this bill should be adopted.
Further to discussion on Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni said that it's degrading to work and not get paid for it. I wouldn't want the hundreds of thousands of volunteers in Minnesota, as we celebrate Volunteer Appreciation Month this month, to hear that. But I also think that it might be degrading to get paid and not be working. And I think that's a poor example for people to set for their children, that they have an expectation that they're going to get money and they're not working. And so if we're asking them to build their resume, to build job skills through volunteer positions, I think that's an important thing for us to do so that we can make sure they're employable at some point in time. And, I just think that it's not too much to ask people to do something to get something. The mentality in our society is too often, I should get something for nothing. I mean, it adds to our problems with gambling and issues like that. We need to change that mentality and let people understand that you need to do something to get something.
Senator, me, moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really do wonder, you know, when we talk about these issues, how many of us have ever been on public assistance and know what it's like to go through that process? I'm the oldest child in my family, and when we came to this country, I often became the interpreter and the translator. And those volumes and volumes of monthly reports and applications and watching your earnings, and if you just go just a dollar over the earnings requirement, then the profusion of paperwork that you have to do to just be able to stay within the guidelines, at the end of the day, you wondered if people who are public assistants shouldn't be people with PhDs and with the ability to do the paperwork. And, you know, I thought that at one point the reason why we created these safety nets for people was because we are a community who cares about taking care of each other, and that we recognize that there are families and individuals who will temporarily not be able to help themselves. And so as a community, we want to step in to not take away people's dignity and pride, but to give them a sense of hope and to give people an opportunity to just catch their breath and be able to head on to the next step in their lives. And if that is the rationale, that it is about protecting people's dignity and giving them an opportunity to get over the hardship that they're enduring, then I think we need to come back to a philosophical discussion on why something like this is important. I think whenever we talk about public assistance or whenever we talk about giving help to people, there's always a presumption that there's a lack of a work ethics and people are trying to get something for nothing. And so I would just encourage us as we engage in these discussions perhaps to pull back a little bit and to think about, as a community, what is the community good that we get out of what it is that we are providing? The context that we're operating in is that cost to businesses to provide health insurance and health care has become so astronomical that many businesses who could employ people are moving in the direction of no longer providing full-time jobs, but cutting down even the retail jobs from a 40-hour day to a 30-hour or 35-hour or 36-hour day so that they no longer have to employ full-time individuals, which will implicate them for providing benefits. Not only that, but as a result of these requirements that we have, we're asking people to go out and find work. And instead of engaging discussions with companies to try to provide full-time jobs for individuals we're trying to help, we're allowing them to be working with temporary agencies that are taking them to work at 35, 36-hour jobs that will never lead to a permanent job. And what we have, in essence, done is by not paying attention to the bigger picture of providing an opportunity and providing dignity, we've created a revolving door of keeping people in prison by the deluge of paperwork and the requirements that we're making them go through. And you know, at the end of the day, what some of those mothers really want is to just stay home with their children and take care of their children. And after you look at all the costs, all the bureaucratic costs that have come into this, we might as well just give them flat-out cash assistance and let them stay home and take care of their children. Instead of worrying about where we're going to get money from for childcare, where we're going to get money from to pay for the caseworker that's going to manage how many 35-hour work hours that they're working, and managing the caseworker who's going to be making sure that they fill out those tons of paperwork that they're doing. Why don't we just cut down on the bureaucratic cost, give them the flat-out cash assistance, and have them stay at home with their children? Then maybe we won't have the issue of talking about, you know, not enough early childhood dollars, not enough money for daycare. Maybe some of those mothers would swallow their pride a little bit and say, yes, I will take public assistance, but I would maybe like to stay home and parent my children. Because at the end of the day, that's the value. That's the community value that we get out of what it is that we're trying to do. You know, I don't know how many people smile and go on public assistance and say, I'm going to try to get something for nothing and cheat the system. There may be individuals who do that. I'm sure there are individuals who do that. But those are the marginal individuals. And the rest of everyone else is just looking for an opportunity to catch their breath and maintain their dignity and respect for themselves.
Senator Rosen, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Berglund please yield?
I don't see her in the chambers right now.
I'll come back. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. Senator Limmer, did you wish to? This is not the fasten seatbelt speech, but if you want to talk, stay home. Okay. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that warm invitation. Senator Tomasoni, I had a question regarding the bill, and if you would yield for a question. Senator Tomasoni, what kind of jobs are we talking of that these individuals are being asked to work at? Could you tell me? I'm not a member of your committee, and so I'd like to better educate myself.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, the jobs can range from just about anything to anything, because when workfare went into effect in the city of New York, 30,000 jobs, public sector jobs, were displaced and filled with people from workfare. So essentially what they did was they took 30,000 people who had good paying jobs, they laid them off, and they hired another 30,000 people who were on workfare and didn't pay them a penny. And so they can be any kind of a job. It all depends. We heard of one instance where the woman was forced to work 32 hours a week, and when her time was up, they laid her off and they hired somebody that they paid $10 an hour to. So it can cross a sector of just about any kind of job. The point is that once the person is on the public assistance, the workfare allows people to force them to work for free. And that's different than volunteering. Volunteering is somebody who wants to do some work because they would prefer to do the work for free, because whatever the organization they're working for, or whatever the causes they're working for, they believe it's a good cause. Now, this bill does not preclude people volunteering to do this work. They can still volunteer if they so desire. So the scope of the job can be just about anything.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni, but at the very same time, these individuals, recipients, get some type of general assistance monthly check, don't they? And what's the range of the monthly check? I suppose it's the size of the family that probably determines the size of the check. So one's going to receive a monthly recipient check, and they're asking for a little bit of work. Now, when I go to my job, I put hours in and I get paid a monthly or biweekly check. You see the kind of the comparison that the federal government was talking about was to kind of create a pattern unofficially that kind of reflected a day's work for a day's pay. That's what the federal government was trying to do. Now we're trying to alter that logic. Now I can understand an argument and perhaps the occasional indiscretions of an employer or someone else who takes someone off as a recipient and puts a paid staffer in. I can understand that. One could maybe even say that that's an abuse of the system, but nevertheless, as I remember back, and I've been here long enough to remember these discussions and debates, I believe these things came in during the Clinton administration. President Clinton signed and agreed with the Republican majority at that time for these very changes in the welfare reforms of that day. So you had a bipartisan effort to create this type of pattern, to establish a work pattern for people who are receiving some type of general assistance. And now we want to change that. Now you mentioned that there are some examples that maybe not make sense to everyone. But nevertheless, I look at it, there's a requirement to work, and there's, as a requirement, one receives the general assistance check. So I hope I'm getting this perspective right, because after all, I'm not a member of the committee, and I'm just trying to understand how we got here in the first place.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, this discussion is getting people very confused, I feel. There is nothing in Senator Tomasoni's bill that repeals the work requirements in our welfare laws. We still will have work requirements in our welfare laws. And you have to look for work. You have to take a job if it's offered to you. If you don't, you get penalized. If you keep not cooperating with working, you get penalized to the point where you get no grant at all. What Senator Tomasoni's bill is doing is not taking away that work requirement. That's still in our programs. What he's saying is you don't meet that work requirement by telling somebody that they have to work for an unpaid job. And we have never done this in Minnesota, really. There's no reason for us to start relying on it. We want people to be rewarded for working. And when people are in these unpaid jobs just getting their welfare check, what happens is they're using up their five-year clock. People only have 5 years to be on this program and succeed and move off into a paid job, or they lose their benefits. So while you're working in this unpaid job, you could be working in a paid job, and in a paid job, you could be moving off of welfare at a much sooner period during your five-year time clock. So let's not get confused here. This bill is not removing the work requirement from our welfare program. That's in our program, and it's there to stay.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Berglund please yield?
She will yield. Senator
Thank you.
Rosen.
Senator Berglund, I was just wondering, there is still some confusion, and there was confusion in this committee on the effect of this bill on the TANF funding. I'm wondering, Senator Berglund, why this bill did not come through your committee so we could get a better, more detailed explanation about the federal TANF funding and the work participation rate.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, it's in the omnibus bill that we passed. So it did come through the policy committee that Senator Marty chairs, and it did come through the division. It did go through the full finance committee. It was part of the bill that I carried that where we talked about the other ways that we can meet the work participation rate and be more successful than we would be with this type of an approach. We've actually gotten numbers now on the governor's proposal. You know, it's between 31% and 44% work participation rate. The Senate is between 51% and 55% work participation rate. So the approach that we took in the Senate omnibus bill will get more people working and meeting the federal requirements.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just have to address a little bit what Senator Moi was talking about. I don't know what it's like to be on public assistance, but I did grow up in a family of six, and at one point, Mom had a job as a nursing assistant, a waitress. Dad milked cows and was starting his small utility service business. In addition, we took in refunding, where you fill out for refunding, and we sorted those. And we even planted an acre of pickles, which we sold in North Minneapolis. And I, unbeknownst to me, I was sort of participating in a workfare program, because we did not receive payment for the work we did. But the six kids took their turn in the barn, and we picked pickles in the field. We helped out with the refunding. We answered the phones for the business. And in doing that, we learned a great many skills. And we received tools to help us in our later work life. So I have to disagree about this program lacking dignity. I learned professionalism. I learned the value of hard work. I learned humility in the pickle field. Now, I maybe didn't appreciate it at the time, but looking back, I'm very proud of what my parents did. I'm very proud of the work we did. I'm very proud of the skills we learned, and that's what's important about this work fair. It doesn't happen right away. We don't put these people into indentured servitude right away. What happens is they have 6 months to find a job, and if they don't, then we find a job that will provide them with some skills, get them some experience. Ideally, they might start at a job working for free, and they do a good job, and that company will hire them. That would be fantastic. That's how it's supposed to work. But I just have to completely disagree that there's no dignity in work. I think there's a great amount of dignity in work. I'm proud of what my parents did. I'm proud of the life that we lived, and I would hope that for other families. And that's why I support the workfare program.
Senator Marty, I don't think you've spoken on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there is value in volunteering and working for unpaid things, but in a situation here, we have to remember where the families are coming from. If you're a single mom with one child under MFIP, you get, I think it's $437 a month to live on. And under work requirements we have, it's 20 hours a week, I believe, for one child under six. If they're over six, I think it's 30 hours. And we do have, and Senator Berglund's designed a lot of wonderful efforts to make sure people get into the education and the job training they need. But here we've had people who rake gravel parking lots, do things like that for 20 hours a week times 4 weeks a month, 80 hours for $437. I don't think that's minimum wage. And if you don't have child care for a child under six, you're probably going to have trouble getting child care. You're not going to have it too easy. And I'm all in favor of people working. I think we should be having jobs available to anybody. If somebody in Minnesota wants to work, we ought to have a job for them, a job that pays them a decent wage so they can make ends meet. But when you've got a child under six, 20 hours a week, and you hope, what we hope they're doing is doing some job application work. We hope they're getting some education so they have a brighter future. But saying they're going to spend 20 hours a week volunteering their time in order to get $437 a month is not very realistic. It just isn't. And I hope that people realize that it's not a question, yeah, when I was growing up, I did a lot of work for unpaid work at home, what we call chores. And that does teach you a lot. And I think there's a lot of value to it. But these are people who, in many cases, again, the people on welfare, one of the reasons is because of serious disabilities, as often as not mental disabilities that don't show, but makes it very tough to find a job. So I'm all in favor of everything we can do to move people up and help them get the job training, the education they need, and make people work hard. But trying to do it when we're not paying them enough to $437 a month, I guess I've never tried to live on that, but I think it would take every spare minute I had to try and find a way to do that, forgetting about child care even.
Senator Ortman, did you?
Thank you, Mr. President. I think we've come a very long way since when my father was all by himself back in the 40s. He didn't have parents looking out for him. His choice was to go to the county poor farm, Mr. President. That was his choice, or to go find some way to support himself, and he did. And he sold newspapers on the corner in downtown Sioux Falls to support himself at the YMCA because the choice was so horrible, the county poor farm. But we don't do that anymore. What we do now is so dignified. $438 a month is actually a lot if you add in housing assistance where people can choose where they want to live. When you add in food stamps, when you add in health care, we actually provide a very dignified set of relief mechanisms for people that are in trouble. When I started my law firm, I was all by myself. I had three children in diapers. I was taking care of my children, I was taking care of my home, and I was working really hard for the opportunity to advance myself and support my family. There's an awful lot of dignity in that, Mr. President, and I am hurt by the conversation that says somehow when we look out for people by providing workfare programs and we provide subsidized housing and we provide food stamps and we provide health care that we're not doing enough. I think we are doing enough. There's a lot to be said for individual responsibility, which is the core of our very country and our history. It's about taking care of yourself, providing for yourself. Now, sure, there are some people that need the safety net, and I acknowledge that. We provide Social Security for people with permanent disabilities. We've worked very hard as a society, as a country, as a state, in our counties to look out for people and provide what they need. And I don't think it's respectful in this chamber to suggest that we haven't and that we need to be doing more. I think we should look at how far we've come.
Senator Pariso.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, in addition to some of the comments made by Senator Koch and Senator Ortman, there are a whole lot of people who recall youth, either their parents, their siblings, or other relatives or friends, who crawled along the dirt in fields to weed onions, carrots, you name it, pick pickles, dig potatoes. And that isn't very far back in our... And might I remind people of the high professions today, people who want to break into them, you're asking people who have already been in higher ranking jobs than some of those you're talking about today, volunteering in a field at a firm or in an area that will link them to a better job in a profession. So it's a definite entree to other jobs. And it can't be disputed that any level at all that can get you some good favor showing that you have work habits that work and that matter and that will sustain, an employer will look at you as a good employee. I don't think that you can take down the fact that those people who are getting some training, whether and let's face it, it isn't working for free because they're getting some payment. It's a matter of pride that most of us have relatives in our and people at home, whole lot of constituents who remember the very kinds of things that brought big farms into organization. Very humble work. I don't think we should denigrate any of it.
Okay, we've had about 45 minutes on this subject, and I might be wrong, but I think most people's minds are probably made up. I've been wrong before, but so we're going to try to wrap this thing up if we can. Senator Wergen and Senator Senjum, and we're going to move on.
Mr. Chair, I certainly hope people haven't made up their minds about the A50 amendment that I'm going to offer. They haven't even heard it yet. I would like to offer the A50 amendment.
Oh, we didn't make up our minds on this one yet. Yeah. We will shortly, though, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Secretary will report the A50 Wergen amendment.
Senator Wergen moves to amend Senate File 514 as follows. Page 1. After line 11, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Wergen on the amendment.
Mr. President, Before I go into the amendment, I just have to pass on a little bit of a tidbit of knowledge that Senator Higgins implanted in my mind just a few moments ago. She said to mention to Senator Koch and Senator Pierce so that you don't plant or pick pickles, you plant and pick cucumbers and you turn them into pickles. Thank you, Senator Higgins, for the lesson in horticulture and agriculture. Anyway, Mr. President, the A50 amendment, when we hand out cash assistance and when we give all of these general assistance things, I do believe that it's okay to have requirements and restrictions that run along with that cash assistance. The A50 amendment simply says that folks cannot use their electronic benefits transfer card, the EBT as we have come to know it. They cannot use the EBT card to purchase alcohol or tobacco. That is not nutritional. We passed a smoking ban in this body that, as a matter of fact, said smoking, cigarette smoke is hazardous to your health. And so if it's hazardous, why should the EBT card be used to purchase it? Alcohol, is it hazardous to your health? That's up for argument. But the fact is that it's not a necessity to life, and perhaps it's something that we simply don't need to purchase with EBT cards. And so, Mr. President, this just simply says, and there is no cost, by the way, I've removed the cost by saying that the department must charge a fee which covers the cost of the transactions that could, although I don't believe, could potentially happen as a result of EBT card purchasers going to cash machines, et cetera, et cetera. It just simply, members, is a common sense measure that says you can't use government cash benefits to buy alcohol or tobacco. Thank you.
Mr. President. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I question the germaneness of this amendment. The underlying bill prohibits unpaid work for cash assistance. This would define how the would prohibit certain purchases from MFIP recipients. And those are two different things. The test of germaneness under Rule 35 is that if it's a different subject or a different purpose of the underlying bill, it is not germane. If either one of them fails, it is not germane. And as I say, this is way different from what the underlying bill is trying to do, so I would suggest it is not germane.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I respectfully disagree with Senator Betzold. This does deal with the cash assistance and the use of cash assistance, and the underlying bill also addresses cash assistance payments. The second piece that enters into this, I think, is that when you look at the underlying bill, there is reference to 256J chapter of law, and if you look at the amendment, it also is from chapter 256 of law, and so, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, I do believe this is germane.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, except that the underlying bill is a labor law bill, and the amendment is a welfare benefits amendment. They are two different subjects and purposes.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, further, I would just give advice that this amendment has fiscal impact, and the bill itself is not a bill that has fiscal impact. So if this amendment would go on the bill, I would have to ask for the bill to be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
It's a different chapter of law.
Mr. Me. Chair.
Yeah, I understand that, but I know the test. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect, Senator Berglund, it does not have a cost, because that's why it says that there must be fees charged by the department to cover that cost, so it would be cost neutral. And Senator Betzold, clearly, the unpaid work provision deals with cash benefits, because that's what it's cross-referenced to.
Mr. President, it doesn't matter whether someone has an amendment that pays for something, that raises revenue, and then another part of the amendment costs money. The fact of the matter is that those issues need to be looked at by the Finance Committee with a fiscal note to make sure that if we are spending money, that we are paying for it. And this bill itself is not a financial bill. The amendment is.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, this is clearly not germane. It clearly expands the scope of the bill and even adds a couple of sections to the bill that I don't even have right now. So I think it's a pretty simple ruling of non-germaneness.
Senator Wergen. Okay. I believe that this is not germane. I think it's a stretch. It relates to a different purpose for sure, and probably a different subject matter, so I would rule not germane. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've not done this before, but I challenge the ruling of the chair. With all sincerity, I do believe that this is germane to the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I request a roll call vote.
The question before the body is the opinion of the chair that this be whether the chair is sustained. So I believe a green vote would support my decision. Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 38 ayes and 19 nays. The decision of the chair is sustained. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Marty, did you wish to?
Mr. Chairman, just one more brief comment, and that is that I believe very much in the dignity of work, paid and volunteer work, but in the African-American community, there's a long and ugly history of unpaid work. And I think we should keep in mind, because a lot of these folks are living with that history, and I think the idea of encouraging people to work and training them for work and all the other work requirements that are already in law accomplish that, but the idea that we are encouraging dealing with certain communities of color and talking about unpaid work, I think we ought to keep in mind some of our history, too.
Further discussion, Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, I have the A53 amendment.
Secretary will report the Neville A53 amendment.
Senator Neville moves to amend Senate File 514 as follows, page 1, line 7. This is the A53 amendment.
Senator Neville, discussion on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a simple amendment. There was one part of the testimony that, if correct, offends me as well, and that is that one witness said that she was working 30-plus hours a week. What this amendment would do is say that you can't ask for any free work for more hours than the amount of the cash assistance divided by minimum wage. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not even sure if that exists in statute already or if it's in rule, but this would make explicit that if you get, for example, $300 a month in cash wages, the most that you'd have to work is $300 divided by the minimum wage. That would be the most amount of free hours that you'd have to work in a month. So that's what this amendment is intended to clarify, but it would retain the ability to continue the program up to that level. And I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Hands roll. There will be a roll call. Senator Tomasoni, discussion on the A53 amendment.
Mr. President, I'm opposing this amendment. The voluntary work that the people are doing is already below minimum wage, and this is setting a ceiling. And I don't think this is the right way to go. And it's definitely not what this bill is intended to do. So I'd urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Senator Van de Veer on the amendment.
Is it Mr. Chair or Mr. President?
Chair.
Mr. Chair, will Senator Tomasoni yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Van de Veer.
Senator Tomasoni, did you say that this was too high, paying them the minimum wage? Yeah. Was
Senator,
too much money?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Van de Veer, I said that people that are on cash assistance who are working 30 hours a week for $446 a month are being forced to volunteer to work for that amount are being paid less than minimum wage.
Senator Van de Veer.
I think, Mr. President, and will Senator Neville yield?
Senator Neville will yield.
Senator Neville, does this just says that you can't make them work for less than that? But would this prevent using a calculation at a higher amount if the department wanted to?
Senator Neville.
This would set a cap on the amount of hours that a person could be expected to work without pay. I just did a rough calculation. So if the cash benefit per month was $446 and the current minimum wage is $615, it would be about 75 hours, more or less, a month. So that's less than 20 hours a week. If somehow the minimum wage is increased, it would be even fewer hours than that.
So, Mr. Chair, I think we should have a roll call on this amendment.
I think we already I think it's already been asked for a roll call. So any further discussion? Secretary will take the roll on the Neville Amendment. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll, or be it 24 ayes, 34 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the Rosen A51 amendment. Oh,
yes. Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate File 514 as follows. Page 1, after line 11, insert. This is the A51 amendment.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, this amendment just requires a drug test for anybody that is on assistance. And I think this is very fair because it's the right of an employee. So if somebody is receiving assistance, I do believe that they should have a drug test. And we should make them accountable for that.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I want to challenge the germaneness of this bill. This is another one that expands the scope of the bill, and I believe it's not germane.
Further discussion. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would respectfully disagree with it. I do believe this is in the realms of this bill because it's clearly refers to the same section. We are talking about just having the same rights for these employers if they are having somebody working with them and not in volunteer work, because frankly these people that are on assistance, that are on this work fair, they are receiving funds. They are receiving payment every month. And yeah, it might not be quite what we would want to pay them, but they are learning skills. They are developing a work ethic, and it is not a volunteer job. And so I do think that we should be able to have the same, the employer should have the same rights to drug test their employees. And I should say, too, Mr. Chair, that we hear all this talk about being unfair and how it's so hard to be on welfare and public assistance. And what about the fairness for these people that are carrying 2-3 jobs? These mothers or single fathers or just families in general?
Excuse me, I think we're on the question more of germane to Senator
right.
Rosen,
you,
and
Chair.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I think that's the issue right now we're talking about. Any question, any comments on germaneness? I, again, think this is a stretch. We're talking today about regulating unpaid work, and we're into the area of drug testing. So under Rule 35-2, I will rule that the amendment is not germane. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to have a roll call on this, and thank you. I would challenge the roll call, please. Thank you.
You want to challenge the ruling?
I would like to challenge the ruling. Thank you, with a roll call.
Okay, again, a green vote sustains the ruling of the chair that I made about germaneness. Secretary will take the roll. That was all right. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 40 ayes and 19 nays, the ruling of the chair is sustained. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to finish the roll that I was on there. And I was talking about the unfairness of this whole issue for the families or the single mothers that are trying to raise some children, or the, even the single fathers, how they're holding down 2-3 jobs to make ends meet, and that refuse to go on assistance because they want to continue to work and they want to continue to provide. And I'm not saying anything against anybody that's on assistance. I'm just saying that this should not be considered a volunteer program. This is, and they should not think that they're being forced to be on assistance. They should be thinking about how they're going to improve their life and how they're going to get back into the workforce with quality work ethic and perhaps fulfill our work shortage that we're going to see in a few years. And I always think about FDR and back when he developed the Work Progress Administration, the WPA, and now those gentlemen went out and they worked for very almost little to nothing because they needed to work. That's what it's all about.
Further discussion on Senate File 514. Senator Sinjum.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I rise in opposition to this bill. I think, and there's people across Minnesota watching us this morning, and I rather think probably 90% would agree on what Senate Republicans are saying here this morning, and that is basically that work is good. Work is good, and dependency is bad. And for goodness sakes, the whole idea of work and the creation of a work ethic and the mood that's created by work, the interactions that are created by work, everything about this is positive. And for goodness sakes, as we think about what this bill means in terms of workfare, welfare, volunteer work is good also. As has been pointed out by many of the speakers this morning, learning to work is not a bad idea. The work ethic is good. We talk about dignity. For goodness sakes, work creates dignity. The ability to be self-sufficient, to work, to be dignified, to be able to take care of yourself from the standpoint of financial responsibility, that's what this country is all about. That's what the state needs to be all about. So, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman in this case, I rise in opposition to this bill. And I hope that as people across Minnesota, as they watch this morning, they too will agree with us the fact that we need to do everything we can in this state to encourage work, to avoid dependency, to move off, if you will, the cycle of poverty, and to move forward with the state. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call vote.
Three hands. There'll be a roll call. Further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Tomasoni that Senate File 514 be recommended to pass. Secretary will take the roll. Being secretary will close the roll. There being 34 ayes and 24 nays, the bill is recommended to pass. The next bill, number 28, Senate File 868, Senator Laurie. Excuse me, before Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, is it possible for me to change my no to a yes vote?
We have to.
Did he announce the vote already?
You okay, we're going to move on to, did you mix up two there, Senator Olsen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought I pushed my green button, but I just noticed it didn't show up.
Right.
So.
The majority leader is right. We'll have this on the calendar either tomorrow or the next day, and you'll get a chance to, in some people's opinion, do the right thing or the wrong thing. Okay, we're going to discuss this morning, Senate File 868, Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 868 be recommended to pass.
Senator Laurie, on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill, a small bill, putting current practice regarding licensure into current law into sync with current practice. Historically, speech pathologists and audiologists have been treated together in their licensure statute, and over time, audiologists have been required to do more and more difficult and highly skilled work, and the state of the art has come to where audiologists receive doctoral degrees with an emphasis in audiology. And those are the only programs that certify for audiologist licensure today. And so the purpose of this statute is to break those apart. The current statute then specifies speech pathologists, where it used to apply to both speech pathologists and audiologists, and a new section introduced to apply only to audiologists and require a doctoral degree with a major emphasis in audiology in order to apply for licensure to become an audiologist.
That's good.
We know of no organized opposition to this bill, and I would ask for the member support.
Further discussion on Senate File 868. Seeing none, Senator Laurie renews his motion. That's Senate File 868 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders be Senate File 1302. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1302 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pappas on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is an agency bill from the Met Council. In Section 1 of the bill, a nonprofit foundation may be established, and the purpose of this foundation would be to acquire or finance the acquisition of lands and other assets for public recreation and open space within the metropolitan area. Then Subdivision 2 forms the board of directors for the nonprofit, and Subdivision 3 establishes an advisory committee. In Section 2 of the bill, the Council is proposing a one-time allocation of no more than $1 million from the Council's Livable Communities Demonstration Account in 2007. And the purpose of that is to assist local governments in updating their comprehensive plans, which they're required to do every 10 years. So this one-time distribution will help them defray the costs. And that's all there is to the bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 1302, seeing none. The question occurs on the motion by Senator Pappas that Senate File 1302 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda be Senate File 1791. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1791 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of the bill is to establish guidelines for instruction on Minnesota American Indian tribes for the Minnesota academic standards, and it requires the Commissioner of Education to include those contributions into the standards when the standards are next reviewed and revised. The bill also requires the Board of Teaching to adopt rules to improve the understanding, effective instruction of, and communication with Minnesota American Indian tribes as part of professional development requirements for teachers. And finally, the bill sets up an advisory task force on Minnesota American Indian tribes and K-12 standards-based reform. And members, just for fun, I picked up the pocket guide to Minnesota place names, and I turned randomly to K. And I wanted to give you just a little example of our Native American heritage in our state. The word Kabakona, it's a lake and it's a river in Hubbard County, but it's an Ojibwe name that means the end of all roads. Kabatogama is a lake and a town. Say, what is it?
Kabatogama
is a lake and a township in St. Louis County, which has bears an Ojibwe name, which means the lake that lies parallel. Kennebec County, isn't that it?
Kennebec.
I always thought it was Kennebec. Kennebec County uses the Ojibwe word for snake. Kandiyohi County bears the Dakota name, meaning where the buffalo fish come. Kandota Township in Todd County means here we rest. I'll do a couple more. Kasota Township in Lasura County, that's a Dakota name that means clear or cleared off. And Kawashiwi River has an Ojibwe name meaning the river full of beavers, beaver houses. And finally, Kiwatin has an Ojibwe name meaning north or north wind. So there's an incredible amount that there is to learn about our Native American history in our state. So I would hopefully get your support.
Further discussion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From someone who represents Shakopee, which is also an Indian name, named after one of the chiefs, I do have an amendment to offer. It's the A9 amendment.
Secretary will report the Roebling A9 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend Senate File 1791 as follows, page 2, line 17. This is Amendment A-9.
Senator Roebling on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two parts of this. In the bill, a task force is directed to come up with some recommendations by February of 2008, but earlier in the first section of the bill, the commissioner is asked to start making changes to standards or consider changes for standards already in the 2007-2008 school year. So we are changing that so that the commissioner can wait for the recommendations from the task force and start in the 2008-2009 school year. And also, in the part where the task force is to make the recommendations, it said that they would make recommendations on the standards, on each area of the standards, if any. But in the first part of the bill, it did say that each of the standards would be affected. But we want to determine after the recommendations from the task force what standards would be determined. It could be all of the standards, but it might not be whatever would be considered appropriate by the task force and the commissioner. So I don't know if anyone has any questions. I think Senator Pappas is okay with this.
Mr. President?
Yes.
We can't get the amendment up.
It's not up. Pardon? It's not up yet. Senator Pappas, did you wish to discuss the amendment before?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I do support the amendment, and what it is doing while we're waiting for it to come up is on line 217, it's striking each of, and on line 219, it's delaying the effective date a year from 2008 to 2009. So I think that's very reasonable. It makes sense. Senator Roebling and I have been discussing this, so I'm fine with the amendment.
Do any of the members feel the need to wait for this to come up? The author agrees, and we're adding 1 year to the report. So, see any? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1791 as amended. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Pappas that Senate File 1791 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The next bill under consideration, Senate File 1126, Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1126 be recommended to pass.
Senator Betzel on the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. In the past couple of years, the legislature spent quite a lot of time working on the issue of sexual predators, both in the criminal law matter, the civil commitment area. That has not been much of an issue this year, but as laws take effect, I think we have to look around and see if there are some unintended consequences. And this bill deals with, I believe, an unintended consequence. This bill was brought to me, which has the support of the courts, the county attorneys, and the public defenders. And what this bill does is it looks at the issue of what happens to underaged individuals, usually males, who have committed some offenses, often using bad judgment. Sometimes maybe it's exposure, or maybe it's a young male having inappropriate relations with a girlfriend or whatever. But because of the letter of the law, as we have passed it, they are facing probably a lifetime label as a sexual predator. And most of the courts and the county attorneys have felt that this was probably going too far. There are other ways to deal with this, but the conundrum that they've been put in is the fact that if they ignore the law, they're actually ignoring some behavior that they really ought not to. But by applying the law, as I say, you're going to be forcing some individuals into a system that they really don't belong in. So what this bill does is basically indicates that, you know, if a person has committed certain offenses and they're 16 years age or older, if it's a serious offense, and usually they would be certified as an adult in the district court, they will be held responsible, and quite appropriately so. However, if they are under the age of 16, the courts, which would usually be the juvenile courts, could handle it, and they would not be facing this. So this would eliminate the low-level offenses that really can be handled in other ways without the long-term consequences that we've had in the sex offender statutes. As I say, it does have the support of the courts, the county attorneys, and the public defenders. I stand for any questions.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Lance.
Thank you. Will Senator Betzel yield to a question?
He will yield. Senator Latz.
Senator Betzel, as I'm looking at the language here, it appears that where individuals are charged with a felony but are then convicted of that offense or another offense arising out of the same set of circumstances, if it was an EJJ situation and they were under 16, they would still be required to register. So, for example, if they were charged with a felony but they were convicted of a misdemeanor offense, they would still be required to register, even if the it might have been overcharged in the initial instance or there were other issues relating to the charges that led the case to be resolved as a misdemeanor. Am I reading that correctly, Senator?
Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lass, I've got the bill before me. Could you point to the part that you were, the page in line that you're referring to?
Senator Lass.
Senator Betzel, I'm looking at page 3, line 11, and line 12.
Okay, I see what you're Betzel. Referring to. Again, this is a matter that this part, I don't know that misdemeanor offenses would raise to that level. The person would have to be charged with a felony violation in order for this to come about. You're referring to the last part, convicted of that offense or another offense arising under the same set of circumstances. It's the felony offense that is going to be driving this. And the issue that has come forth that brought this bill forward is the fact that some of the offenses are not felony offenses, but they do happen to fall within the purview of what we've passed that could qualify as lifetime sex offenders. But there certainly was a desire that if individuals are committing felony offenses, that could be done. Now, as a practical matter, what's been happening is that sometimes they try to negotiate something so it's bargained down so they're not holding the individual to a felony offense. But even then, when they try to reduce it, they're still falling within some of the requirements that we've passed. So I think that the intention here is that if it's a felony level or if it's tied into something, even if the underlying another set of circumstances might have been a misdemeanor. If it's a felony, I think they still want to hold on to the opportunity to hold the individual responsible. But I have, as a practical matter, if the circumstances warrant it and they can they feel that this is not the kind of case that they want to have as a lifetime sex offender, they'll probably try to work something out within the courts and the defense lawyers and the county attorneys so that they don't have the lifetime offense. But if it's serious, they do want to proceed with it.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzold, I see there are two paragraphs that have this kind of language in it. Line 3.5 deals with an initial felony charge, certification as an adult, and then convicted. And I'm not having any quarrel with if they end up being certified as an adult, regardless of what the conviction level ends up being. But 3.9 to 3.12 deals with an initial felony charge if they're designated EJJ, extended jurisdictional juvenile. And so they're still within the juvenile system and being dealt with, I think, in the juvenile court, even though it's an EJJ situation, which would allow them to be overseen by the juvenile system beyond the age of majority. I think it's like another 2 or 3 years beyond age of 18. And under those circumstances, if they are convicted of another offense arising out of the same set of circumstances, they would still be required to register. So if, for example, it's felony by virtue of trying to determine the level of intent in a crime, and then they end up being convicted of a misdemeanor because the issue relating to intent or consent might be so difficult to establish as a matter of proof that the state would not be able to prove a felony, but they were charged as a felony, and there are a variety of different reasons why something might be charged initially as a felony, even if the level of proof might be rather tenuous, which is why it might end up getting resolved as a misdemeanor case, but then it would still be required to require registration as a predatory offender. It would not leave any opening in terms of negotiation or resolution between the prosecutor, the judge that's presiding, the defense attorney, or other advocates on behalf of the defendant. Regardless of what they might negotiate to resolve the case, they would not have the option of negotiating out of the registration requirement the way that this particular provision is listed. And so I'm raising that question and be curious as to your response on that.
Might I suggest, unless you have a quick answer, we've got two more bills on the agenda. Maybe
I can point to the current law and see if this resolves. Senator Latz, if you look at page 1, current law lines 1.11 through 1.14 and following, that is current law referring. It's basically the same language we already have in current law. This is not new. It's just tying that what we have in current law. There's a difference. We're trying to make the juvenile courts consistent with what happens in the district court, but it is current law.
Senator Latz, are you comfortable yet, or would you like some? We have a little time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a quarrel I have with current law, too, and I'm wondering if with this bill before us, maybe it's an opportunity to have a discussion or to talk about whether that's appropriate when we're dealing with juvenile offenses. I wonder if Senator Betzold and I might have a chance to talk off the floor about this before the matter gets determined.
Mr. Chairman,
I'll progress the bill to give Senator Latz an opportunity to look into it.
I think that's good. All right. The next bill for discussion on general orders will be Senate File 596, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 596 be recommended to pass.
Senator Olson, discussion on the bill.
Thank you. Senate File 596 is the Data Practices Omnibus Bill. The basis for the bill this year was a technical bill presented by the Information Policy Analysis Division of the Department of Administration. Section 1 of the bill updates definitions related to guardians and conservators. Sections 2, 4, 5, 9 through 33, 35, 36, 41, and 43 substitute the term government entity for the list of entities included in the definition. Section 3 amends 13.04 subdivision 3 to permit the designee of a responsible authority to respond to data requests from individuals who seek access to data about themselves. Section 6 clarifies that attorney general opinions must be numbered and published to supersede an opinion issued by the commissioner of administration under section 13.072. Section 7 clarifies language related to reliance on written, numbered, published advisory opinions by government entities. Section 8 deletes a data reference to the federal regulations on student data for directory information, or excuse me, a date reference. Section 10 amends Section 13.355 to classify all or part of Social Security numbers as private data. There was some confusion over whether the earlier section only applied to a portion of the Social Security number, and this makes it clear that it applies to the entire Social Security number. Section 34 provides a cross-reference for data about homestead tax classifications. This was also in Senator Bach's bill. Section 34 classifies market research data at the Department of Transportation as private or non-public to encourage survey participation. And this was from a bill carried by Senator Rest that was brought to, to data practices by the Department of Transportation. Section 38 classifies data about an overhead rate that consultants may charge the Department of Transportation as private or non-public. Section 39 classifies data held in escrow by the Department of Transportation due to a contract as private or non-public. Section 40 recodifies a current provision of the Bureau of Mediation Services. Section 42 authorizes the removal of an innocent person's name from the public criminal history file if their identity is verified by fingerprints. The reason for this was that in certain circumstances, a person arrested might give a false identity, and that person's name then might be confused in later research or mistaken for the criminal's name. Section 44 provides a mechanism for an individual to locate any records about themselves within the CRIMNET system of multiple databases. Section 45 directs the Department of Natural Resources to share a real estate appraisal with the landowners prior to an offer to purchase by the department. Section 46 corrects a reference to data about high school coaches from non-public to data that are not public. Section 47 amends Section 171.07 to allow criminal justice agencies and public defenders access to driver's license photos. Section 48 amends a definition in the Department of Revenue's data classification chapter. Section 49 is a technical change for revenue concerning informers. Section 50 authorizes the Department of Revenue to use return information to collect debts referred by other government entities. Section 51 authorizes the sharing of data between revenue, the Department of Revenue, and DEED for certain programs. Section 52 classifies some data related to Class 1B homestead applications. And Section 52 is a repealer relating to Section 13.79, which is the existing Bureau of Mediation Services language. I'd like to also at this time thank the other members of the Data Practices Subcommittee, Senators Moore, Betzold, and Senator Limmer, for their long hours and the work they put into this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 596? Seeing none, Senator Olson renews her motion that Senate File 596 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders will be Senate File 988. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I move when this committee do arise, Senate File 988 be recommended to pass.
Senator Higgins on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This year, I authored two bills that together form a package of protection and enforcement tools to fight predatory and abusive lending practices in Minnesota. The Senate unanimously approved the first half of the package, House File 1004, last week, and it was signed into law. Senate File 988 finishes the job by providing enforcement tools necessary for victims and law enforcement to go after predatory lenders. Like House File 1004, it also prohibits some of the most abusive practices in the lending industry. Also, like its counterpart, this bill is supported by a broad coalition and represents a negotiated compromise between the Attorney General, various advocates, and the industry folks. Mr. Chair, I'd like to start, please, with the A6 Amendment.
Secretary will report the Higgins A6 Amendment.
Senator Higgins moves to amend Senate File 988 as follows, page 2 after line 4, insert. This is the A-6 Amendment.
Senator Higgins on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, the amendment does two things. It changes the criminal piece to address concerns raised by the Judiciary Committee, and it pulls a couple of provisions from Senator Scheid's predatory lending bill that the governor and the Department of Commerce wanted. It also fixes an unintended consequence of the first bill that we passed. On the criminal piece specifically, the bill originally provided that prosecution for mortgage fraud doesn't bar prosecution or conviction for any other crime. Most criminal statutes don't contain this provision, so we're removing it. This was an issue brought up in judiciary. It caps the sentence of imprisonment to 2 years for mortgage crime. This also was a judiciary issue they asked us to look into. And the other two pieces from Senator Scheid's bill will require that the courts consider whether restitution is appropriate in mortgage fraud cases. And it clarifies that conspiracy to commit mortgage fraud is also a crime. It also fixed a problem that came up in House File 1004. House File 1004 bans negative amortization loans. Those are the loans where the borrower's payments don't even cover the interest that's accruing on the loan. However, some nonprofits, such as the Family Housing Fund and the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, provide small, low-interest loans to help folks pay closing costs or make a down payment, and they usually charge an interest rate of about 3%. But the borrower is not required to make any payment on principal or interest for several years or until they sell their home. We want to make sure that the ban on negative AM doesn't include these types of loans, and so there is a fix in this amendment, and I ask your support for that amendment.
Further discussion on the A6 amendment. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Higgins, would you yield for a question?
She will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, if I can direct your attention to page 1, line 21 through 25. Did I hear you correctly that this amendment was going to take away the criminal charge for fraud or some type of violation as a result of this bill?
Mr. Senator Chair, Higgins. You misunderstood. All this does is set the cap for the minimum imprisonment in, why is that such a hard word to say, imprisonment at 2 years for the mortgage fraud provisions that are in the bill. And then the second and third sentences are the two pieces from Senator Scheid's bill that Commerce and the governor asked to be put in.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, I, being a member of the Judiciary Committee as you are, I do remember that discussion we had on whether or not this should trigger a criminal offense. Having been a loan mortgage officer in my past life, I'm familiar with writing loans, and you're doing your best to help the consumer get into the house that they want. And take, for example, a first-time homebuyer who might be a young couple. They're certainly not at the peak of their earning years, and so they're trying to maximize the house to accommodate family needs, but sometimes even the best of plans don't always go well, and in a couple of years, something happens. They have a medical bill to pay. They have a car payment that is exacerbated by the transmission that needs to be replaced, and they get behind on a bill shortly after buying that new house. I really would hate to think that a loan officer who's trying to do the very best for a consumer in trying to maximize the buying power of a consumer based on the consumer's wishes would fall into a criminal charge a short time after they get into a loan. And is there any precaution that would prevent that from happening if a loan officer, well, how are they found guilty? What are the standards here on whether they would be found guilty of this type of crime? You usually don't ever see any type of fraud in mortgage issues unless it's years past the time of purchase. So I'm just wondering how would you find the guilty verdict in something like that.
Senator Higgins. Or Senator Scheid, did you wish to?
Senator Scheid.
Senator Scheid, this was your provision, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Higgins, thank you. This has to do with the department's bill. It's creating the bill now that Senator Higgins has also includes a crime of mortgage fraud, and obviously prohibits mortgage fraud, residential mortgage fraud, and that fraud is committed if you knowingly make or cause to be made deliberate and material misstatements, misrepresentations, or omissions during that process with the intention that it be relied upon, Senator Limmer, to knowingly make a misstatement that you know will be relied upon. That I think the standard's pretty high. I don't think that missing a detail is going to get you convicted of mortgage fraud. It's knowingly facilitating the use of any deliberate and material misstatement, misrepresentation, or omission, knowing that that person will rely on it. And so I think it's pretty safe to say that the kind of the situation you're describing wouldn't be affected.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Senator Scheid might be able to answer this question, or Senator Higgins. I'll let you decide which one can answer this. As a loan officer, and I know that a lot of this is directed toward the loan officer or the loan company that's offering the mortgage. And have we made any reference to the underwriter? Quite often the underwriter isn't even a member of the corporation that's making the loan. They're on contract, the underwriter represents the investor that's putting up this money for home loans. Underwriters can't always have the opportunity of being a part and parcel of a potential fraud case. Is an underwriter mentioned anywhere in this bill?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, yes. If you go to page 8, where it describes residential mortgage fraud, you'll notice that underwriting is considered part of the mortgage lending process. It also includes the closing, the actual funding of the loan, all those aspects of a mortgage loan from beginning to end, from application to closing, are covered by this.
We're on the Higgins, Senator Higgins' A6 amendment. Further discussion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File 988 as amended? Further discussion on the bill. Further question. The question occurs on the motion by Senator Higgins at 9. Senate File 988 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate will come to order.
Mr. President.
I want to move the Committee of the Whole as kept by the Secretary be adopted. Is that your?
Mr. President, I move that the report of the Committee of the Whole be kept as kept by the Secretary be now adopted.
On the Pogue-Miller motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, do you know where the Secretary keeps those?
I believe in his pocket.
Where do you keep it?
Okay, what are we doing?
Couple of motions. I have a motion Senator Rest has asked me to make. I move that Senate File 2126, number 32 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. It has appointments in it.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. 2-0.
Senator Miller,
did you have another? Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 140, number 11 on the calendar, be stricken and placed on general orders.
Okay. It's your bill.
Yes.
On the motion, all those in favor. Senator Limmer, did you want to know what the Senator Limmer?
Mr. President, it was described that the bill is currently on the calendar and they want to move it to the general orders.
Isn't that kind of unusual?
Should we have an explanation of why?
That's a good question. Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, I had a discussion with Senator Wergen. She had an amendment to the bill, which I accepted, that had an unintentional consequence of wiping out all the other diseases that would be covered by this bill. We would like to make that correction.
Okay. On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Any other? Anything else at the desk? There's Senator Pogue-Miller.
Mr. President, before I move to adjourn, the plan for tomorrow will come in at 10. And we will take up the calendar that we didn't take up today, plus the lyovers on the calendar today. And we will do a few general orders, I would think. I have not seen a list, but we're getting down there to there's not much left. And we then hope to have the opportunity to pass the bonding bill conference committee. I believe the House intends to take that up in the morning, first thing. And then we would... Before they take up their tax bill. So then I think we would be able to take it up. So the intent is to take up the bonding bill tomorrow. Conference.
Further announcement, Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Division Conference Committee will meet in the basement meeting room of the State Office Building 1/2 hour after the House adjourns, assuming they adjourn before 4 p.m. If they go beyond 4 p.m., we will not meet today. But as long as they adjourn before 4 p.m., we will meet 1/2 hour after the House adjourns.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, members, the Conference Committee on Economic Development could possibly meet today also, depending upon when the House adjourns. If they do adjourn too late, then we won't be meeting, so just stay tuned.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Environment Finance Conference Committee will meet tonight starting at 7 p.m., room 107.
Senator Pappas.
The Higher Education Conference Committee will meet 1/2 hour after the House adjourns. If the House goes into the evening, we'll have to reconsider. We plan, our conference committee, we want to go into the evening, but if the House is continuing, we're not going to meet at 10 o'clock at night. And the conferees are invited to bring your lunch and meet with me in my office right after session adjourns.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, the Veterans and Ag Conference Committee will meet as soon as the House gets done with their work.
Senator Higgins?
Public Safety Conference Committee will meet a half hour after the House adjourns.
Senator Clark?
The E-12 Conference Committee will be meeting at 1:30 in 1:12.
Okay, without objection, Senator Cohn, Senator Saxog, Stump, be excused from today's session all day. Senator Ress from 10:30 on. Senator Jungbauer, 10:30 to 11:30. Senator G. Olson at 10:30 on. Senator Dibble at 11:15 on. Senator Senjum from 11:20 to 11:35. Senator Dahl from 11:10 to 11:55. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, for other further planning, so for those who are not on conference committees, the intent would be to take general orders, the calendar at 10 in the morning, take the calendar, wait for the bonding bill, vote on the bonding bill, and then we may do some general orders, but we would probably get out of here early afternoon. I don't know if we'd make it quite by noon, but pretty close. And then we would recess, and a few members would have to stick around to accept the report on the House tax bill so that we could process that. And,
more than a few members.
Members
Porter-Miller.
I think we are going to have to take a roll call on the omnibus tax bill again then to get it over the House. What we want to do is process the message so we can get the conference committee appointed tomorrow. So I think we're going to be here because the House is going to process that bill, and they're starting early in the morning, so hopefully it'll be sometime in the afternoon at a reasonable time. So I was hoping to indicate that some members would not have to stick around tomorrow afternoon, but I'm afraid actually members will have to, because we have to put the Senate file onto the House file and then vote it again. So,
without objection, Senator Limmer will be excused from this morning's session from 11:30 to 12. Senator Pogemiller.
Okay, then, Mr. President, I would move that the Senate adjourn till Friday, April 27th, 10 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn till 10 a.m. tomorrow, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.